Hi, my name is Jeff Josephson, and I'm the principal author of Lead Generation. I'd like to take just a moment to introduce myself and set the stage for what you're about to read or watch. With the apologies for temporarily abandoning the editorial we for the moment, over the last 40 years, I've read hundreds of books and articles on marketing and sales, taken scores of courses, and learned from some of the best in the business. And many of our employees and clients have contributed to this book even more. I've also invented a few techniques, as have they. But the most important thing we've done over the years is test our methods with real businesses in an effort to figure out what really works when it comes to growing sales, market share, and profitability. And the answer is what you'll find in this book. So let me give you a little background. In college in the 1970s, I was a pre-med bio major. I loved research and science and the idea of eventually helping people as a doctor. But organic chemistry had other plans. Fortunately, a required course in economics got my juices flowing in another direction, and business school soon beckoned. And it was there that I became fascinated with how functions like marketing, statistics, accounting, operations, economics, and of course sales work together to create a successful business case that we studied in school. Unlike other topics, though, sales wasn't taught back then in business school, as it was viewed as the red-headed stepchild in the business world. But I was fascinated by the puzzle of how to put the pieces together to create a successful business. So with my freshly minted MBA in hand, I took a field sales job at the Service Bureau Company, the recently divested software division of IBM, which was one of the two places you went to work, the other being Procter & Gamble, if you wanted to learn how to sell professionally. On the belief that a combination of marketing and sales skills would somehow provide me with a shortcut to the executive suite and success. Several months of intensive sales training, Xerox PSS and phone power, mentoring from some of New York Midtown's branches, senior reps, and coaching from my manager only earned me an angry, "Call me back when you learn how to make a damn sales call," click, from more than a few prospects before I even went on quota. Though bent but unbroken, I was on a mission to learn how to sell. More training, more practice calls, more reading from authors like Og Mandino, Zig Ziglar, and Dale Carnegie, more presentations, more buddy calls, more scripting, and more listening finally got me to the point where people wouldn't hang up on me as soon as I told them my name. A bluebird got me my first new account worth a nice 10 grand per month, and knocking on every door from the 86th floor on down in the Empire State Building got me to the 100% club with a gimme first-year quota just in time for the ball to drop in Times Square. Flush with a little bit of conscious competence, I was hooked. I quickly learned the importance of establishing rapport and of asking questions, of not closing too soon or too late. I learned how to handle objections, uncover needs, build value, create urgency, and how to make friends with gatekeepers. I learned how to leverage references and contacts and time, and I managed to sell enough, a little over $2 million in 3 years, to pay my rent before deciding that it was time to get back on my original career track. As I had hoped, the combination of marketing and sales skills, along with some serendipitous experience in the new field of IT, or what we called it back then, DP, landed me a job helping to start up a strategic planning unit at Western Electric, the manufacturing division of the old Bell System. My assignment there was to identify and bring to market technologies that were being developed in Bell Laboratories that could be successfully commercialized. The first product they gave me was a multiplexer. Back then, almost everything in the telephone network was analog, but having fought with a dial-up modem for a few years, I wasn't afraid of digital, and the economics of multiplexing in the telephone network seemed pretty good for certain geographies, according to the developers. Not knowing anything about the market, though, I decided to ask some questions. What were the applications? What were the underlying needs? Who were the real customers? And what were the benefits and value? And why should anybody buy it? Since the mindset at the labs back then was mostly if you build it, they will use it, I decided to do a little market research and get some more meaningful answers. And based on what I found, I put a sales deck together and pitched it to Southern Bell, who placed an initial order for about $5 million worth of equipment, which eventually grew into a $500 million a year business. Next up was single mode fiber optics. To be sure, multimode fiber had been around for a few years, but its long-haul application domain was limited. Single mode could handle a lot more bandwidth, but neither I nor anyone else understood why anyone would need it, as it was a lot more expensive. So I did some more market research, and I discovered that there was a lot of latent demand for something we called information, which is easier to handle digitally than in analog form. From that research, I was able to put together a business case for scaling production, and backed by a credible forecast of end-user demand, I convinced the few telephone companies that incorporating it into their networks would prepare them for what the research predicted would be an enormous consumer demand for digital applications. And we walked away with $110 million in first-year orders. From there, things heated up. For example, several Bell Labs groups had been working on applications of a new telecom protocol, SS7, which enabled something called out-of-band signaling. And one of the things that it could do is tell you the phone number of the person who's calling before you picked up the phone. Neat, I thought. So I tapped into my now more formal market research resource and found out that people liked knowing who was calling before they picked up the phone. It eased their anxiety and enabled them to screen their calls. And so we pushed it out, embedded in a service called ISDN, with initial sales of its line cards and software being somewhere north of $200 million. At that point, it became clear that what determined if there was a market opportunity for a particular technology was if it could profitably solve a real, actionable, underlying need, one for which real people had a real willingness to pay in a competitive market. It wasn't quite an aha moment, as it was as obvious back then as it was now, as it is now. But what I had done that was different was put together a formal and reliable process for figuring out exactly which opportunities to pursue and how to pursue them, which the company had me publish in an industry journal. And it's now one of the foundations of lead generation. Anyway, by that point in the mid-80s, digital was starting to come down the cost curve, so I decided to go for the Hail Mary. Was there enough consumer demand for video to justify putting it in the network? With cable TV bills averaging around $10 a month, justifying digital, which our more optimistic predictions said would cost 10 times as much, was a stretch. But my now rather substantial market research lab told us that if we could provide a video jukebox, demand and willingness to pay were virtually unlimited. And so with a little help from Paramount Pictures, we sold two pilot programs for about $25 million each, and with a few twists and turns, the rest is history. To be sure, booking that much revenue, well over $1 billion at that point, when you're backed by a market research department, a Fortune 500 name, and the premier lab and telecommunications manufacturer in the world, may be a bit of a cheat. Regardless, bored with politics and headquarters, I wanted to get back into the field, and I put in for a transfer to run a sales team. To boost my chances of surviving as the manager of a team of 50 highly experienced and go-it-alone sales reps, I quickly signed up for every sales training program and every sales management training course I could find. Solution selling, strategic selling, consultative selling, sales management, and more. And soon I was back in the field. As far as performance is concerned, we did pretty well. In our first year, we closed over $500 million in a virgin market, finishing at 120% of quota as a team. In the second year, we closed over $600 million and 106% of handshake. And in the third year, we blew past $700 million and 140% of quota, all for a startup division. For me, though, what was most important was what I learned from people who had been pounding the pavement, in some cases for decades. I went on every call that they would let me ride on, I listened, I took notes, and I fought for their deals and gave them whatever tools they needed without question. In return, though, they taught me everything they knew about selling, and they gave me a plaque and a party 3 years later when it was time for me to move on. But everything these friends taught me is in this book, too. My last gig for the company put me in a group that needed a turnaround, and after them having lost an $800 million contract. It was the first time I ever set up a call center, and it wasn't the last time I ever groveled to get another shot at the business. But success has many fathers, so when the division got taken over, it was my cue to leave and go out on my own. So I incorporated JVM as a sales and marketing consulting company dedicated to helping SMBs and the occasional orphan division of a Fortune 500 grow their sales. Rather than stay in the corporate world, I thought it would be more fun helping businesses build their own sales teams and market their products, bringing me with me whatever expertise in marketing and sales I had gained over the previous 15 years. The only shift in what we've done since starting the company was when a client told me he didn't want us to build him a sales team, he wanted us to rent him one. It seemed like a good idea, so with the exception of signing contracts, ever since we've handled as much or as little of the revenue-generating cycle as the client needed, as LeadGen.com. Conservatively, we've booked over $2 billion in attributable sales for approximately 350 direct clients over the last 20 years, including examples like having generated over $1.5 million in new sales for an engineering firm. We generated $600,000 in new sales for a legal publisher. We generated over $3 million in new sales for a 3D software company. Over $400,000 in new business for a paper manufacturer, over $2 million in new sales for an airplane maintenance company, over $60 million in new sales for a wire manufacturer, and over $30 million for new sales for an accounting firm. And the list goes on and on, revenue in big chunks and small in virtually every industry, sometimes for months and sometimes for decades. Note, of course, that these are all closed sales, not just leads. But if you add what we've done for our clients as LeadGen.com to what we did for employers, you get well beyond $4 billion. And the pull-through, resells and upsells, is easily double that and probably more. Anyway, this book is the result of hundreds of campaigns, tens of thousands of calls, hundreds of thousands of cold calls, and millions of words and dollars in training, testing, mailing, and ads. But if it helps you be more successful, we've done our job.